Radio Prague News.
The Civic Democrats have filed a complaint with the Constitutional Court over the charging of former leader Petr Nečas on suspicion of bribery. Ethnic Czechs in Ukraine say they're disappointed that Prague has decided not to help them move to the Czech Republic. And nearly 60 people have died after being hit by trains in the Czech Republic so far in 2014. The Civic Democrats have filed a complaint with the Constitutional Court over the charging of former party leader and Prime Minister Petr Nečas on suspicion of bribery. 27 MPs from the deputies groups of the Civic Democrats and Top 09 have signed the complaint, a spokesperson for the former party said on Tuesday. Mr. Nečas is accused of having bribed three then Civic Democrat MPs with lucrative posts at semi-state companies for not toppling his government. The three were charged with bribe-taking last summer, but released under parliamentary immunity. Mr. Nečas's government fell in the wake of the police operation, in which his then chief aide and future wife, Jana Nađová, was also charged. Members of the Czech community and the Ukrainian region of Volhynia say they're disappointed the Czech government has decided not to help them move to the Czech Republic. More than three dozen ethnic Czech families in Volhynia had said they feared for their futures given the political situation in Ukraine. Spokesperson Emma Snidovic told the Czech news agency that officials from the Czech embassy in Kiev hadn't dedicated enough time to monitoring the situation of the Volhynia Czechs. Czech Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek said on Monday that the officials had decided the minority weren't in danger and wished to move to the Czech Republic for economic reasons. Some 59 people have died after being hit by trains in the Czech Republic so far in 2014. The figure is 20 higher than that registered at this time last year. The latest victims were recorded on Monday, one in the Friedek-Místek area in North Moravia and one in Blansko, which is north of Brno. A spokesperson for the Czech Railways inspection body, Martin Drapal, said the increased number of deaths may be because a relatively mild winter has led more people to walk on tracks. Mr. Drapal said in the vast majority of cases, those killed had been trespassing illegally on ground closed to the public. The US director Tim Burton is due to attend a concert of music from his films composed by Danny Elfman at Prague's Municipal House on Tuesday night. Mr. Elfman will appear in the concert singing a song from the movie Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas. Sketches and storyboards by the filmmaker will be projected above the stage. Some of them will also appear in an exhibition of Tim Burton's art, due to open on Friday at the House of the Stone Bell on Prague's Old Town Square. The helmer of such movies as Batman, Sleepy Hollow and Pee-wee's Big Adventure is also due to attend the opening of that show. Celebrations marking the 100th anniversary of the birth of the great Czech novelist Bohumil Hrabal have kicked off in his birthplace, the city of Brno. The series of events leading up to Friday's anniversary include theatre performances and film screenings of his works, lectures and exhibitions documenting the author's life and work. These celebrations will culminate with a street party outside Hrabal's family home in Židenice, during which the organisers plan to release 100 pigeons. The Czech men's tennis number one, Tomáš Berdych, has reached the fourth round of the Miami Masters. The 28-year-old, ranked seventh in the world, overcame João Sousa of Portugal 6-2, 6-4 on Monday to set up a clash with the American John Isner for a place in the quarterfinals. As expected, Berdych has not been included in the Czech team to travel to Japan for the Davis Cup quarterfinals. Non-playing captain Jaroslav Navratil has nominated Lukáš Rosol, Radek Štěpánek, Jiří Veselý and Jan Hájek for the tie, which takes place on the first weekend of April. The weather, it should be fair with some rain in the coming days. Temperatures will reach up to 14 degrees Celsius. My name is Ian Willoughby and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's programme, the government is planning no immediate assistance to Czech expats in Ukraine. New measures are being sought to tackle Czech football hooligans. And later on, in Focus, we look at a Prague-based organisation which monitors EU banks and funds. All that coming up, so do please stay with us. The Czech government is not planning to provide any special assistance to the Czech community in Ukraine. The decision comes after around 40 families with Czech roots from the Volhynia region asked to be relocated to their old country due to the turmoil in Ukraine. But the Czech government believes they face no immediate threat. Jan Richter has the details.
The government's decision is based on a report compiled in the area in question over the weekend. The Czech embassy in Kiev sent envoys to the city of Zhytomyr, some 120 kilometers west of the capital, to find out whether ethnic Czechs in the area faced any security threats. On Tuesday, Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek told news conference in Prague that no such risks had been determined.
The report suggests that there is no security threat to the locals. We can rule out that members of the Czech community would be targeted by their Ukrainian compatriots. That's something they themselves denied and said they lived in a friendly environment. It seems their interest in coming back is economically and socially motivated.
Last week, around 40 families with Czech roots from the Zhytomyr district approached the Czech government for help, claiming they no longer felt safe. The head of their local association, Emma Snidevich, even made a brief trip to Prague to make the argument in person. She told Czech officials many ethnic Czechs who in the past joined the ousted president Yanukovych's party felt threatened. She argued crime in the area was rampant because of a reduced police presence and that families feared their men would be drafted into the Ukrainian military should an armed conflict with Russia break out. Foreign Minister Zaorálek said the government is in no way underestimating the situation and will keep monitoring developments. But the findings of the Kiev embassy suggest that Czechs in Zhytomyr were safe for the time being.
The security situation in the region has not substantially deteriorated. The conditions the Czechs are living in are not different from those under which their Ukrainian neighbours live.
Mr. Zaorálek also said Czech expats in Ukraine and elsewhere could apply for fast-track permanent residency permits and move to the Czech Republic on their own. There are an estimated 10 to 20,000 ethnic Czechs living in parts of Ukraine. Besides Zhytomyr and Volhynia, they're also based in the east of the country and in Crimea. But no requests for help have come from the other areas, according to Interior Minister Milan Chovanec. He told reporters that no dramatic increase in visa applications was registered in recent weeks.
We have not registered any increase in the number of visa applications from ethnic Czechs in Ukraine or from Ukrainians. In the first week of March, we received some 1,400 applications and we issued just over 890 visas. That, in fact, represents a slight decrease compared to the previous week.
In Ukraine, however, many were disappointed by the Czech government's decision. Ms. Snidevich questioned the report's accuracy and said embassy officials only spent 90 minutes in the area. She also told the news website Novinky.cz on Tuesday that the local Czech community was not giving up and was planning to send another petition to Prague.
Jan Richter with that report. Moving on now to the darker side of sport here in the Czech Republic. Events off the pitch rather than on it have grabbed the headlines in newspapers following an outbreak of serious violence at a top football league clash at the weekend. Czech football authorities are suggesting that police should be ready to tackle trouble in the stadium and are also looking for foreign inspiration how to ban hooligans from matches. Chris Johnston reports.
Sounds there as police tried to drive back masked and marauding hooligans at Saturday's top Czech league football match between Banik Ostrava and current league leaders Sparta Prague. Violence erupted at half-time at the match in Ostrava as flares and stadium seats flew across a narrow divide and a flimsy fence dividing the rival fans was torn down. Police with dogs, stun grenades and tear gas eventually intervened with the 15-minute interval stretched out to almost 40 minutes before a semblance of order was restored. Controversially, the game carried on, although many innocent fans, women and children, had already fled to safety away from Bannock's aged stadium. Around a dozen police and members of the public were injured and police detained around 30 people suspected of violent behaviour. The eruption of hooliganism has once again sparked a public debate over what steps Czech football and public authorities should take to stamp out such incidents. At the moment, security within football grounds is the responsibility of the clubs themselves, which often employ stewards or private security firms. Police are only called in when violence breaks out within the ground, as was the case on Saturday. Chairman of the Czech Football Association, Miroslav Pelta, was quick to call for greater steps to tackle hooliganism before somebody is killed in the violence. Pelta held a hastily arranged meeting with the Minister of Education, Youth and Sport, Marcel Chládek, on Monday to discuss the options. The minister voiced the opinion in the post-discussion press briefing that bringing police back into football grounds, with football clubs presumably picking up the bill, could be one of the answers.
At the same time, we'd like to discuss with the Minister of the Interior the possibility of a direct police presence at grounds where games could be said to be high risk. If this had happened at Ostrava, then it's probable, even highly probable, things wouldn't have gone so far.
The idea of registering football fans and issuing them with identification cards, on similar lines to the cards with data chips which are mandatory in the Netherlands, was also raised during the meeting. The Football Association's Pelta said that orders banning so-called fans from grounds can currently be made, but the clubs have no real means of putting those orders into effect because they cannot tell who is who. The Ministry of Interior, though, appeared cautious about bringing police back into stadiums, but has not kicked the idea into the long grass. The principle that football matches are private events and the responsibility of the clubs themselves still reigns in most of Western Europe, and the costs on a cash-strapped police force would be significant. But Interior Minister Milan Chovanec says he is open to talks. Meanwhile, the Football Association and Education Ministry are setting up a working group involving clubs and local authorities, which should report back with specific recommendations on what legislative and other steps should be taken to tackle football hooliganism once and for all.
My thanks to Chris Johnson. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for a fresh edition of In Focus. Tens of billions of euros flow through the European Union's institutional banks, the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development and the European Investment Bank, to projects dotted all over the globe. In many cases, these banking giants are shadowy institutions with little national or public supervision of their decisions and a pretty wide remit for their action. In this edition of In Focus, Chris Johnson speaks to one of the heads of a Prague-based organisation dedicated to making the banks take greater account of what they're payrolling and what the consequences will be.
Of all the European Union's opaque institutions, few can beat its pair of financial twins, the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, EBRD, and the European Investment Bank, EIB, for the lack of public understanding of what they do and how they operate. The EIB and EBRD loaned around 80 billion euros in 2013, with the Czech Republic one of the decision makers in the process, though no longer on the receiving end of EBRD funds. One grouping of non-governmental institutions, Bankwatch, has in recent years tried with some success to shed some light on and influence the operations of Europe's institutional banks and EU funds. The group's Central European headquarters is based in Prague, ironically overlooking a bank. I asked International Affairs Director Petr Hlobil what projects it's focused on and to what extent he feels it's making an impact.
C-Language Network is the network of the non-governmental organizations from the Central and Eastern Europe, and we monitor international financial institutions and their investment, and we're looking for the environmental, social, human rights and other impact of the investment. As our priority, we're looking to the EU funds in the Central and Eastern Europe, but we're also looking to the European Investment Bank, European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, World Bank and other financial institutions. We started in 1996 as the small coalition of organizations who basically recognize that the problems are very similar in between the countries like the Czech Republic, Slovakia and Poland. We noticed that if we want to address those institutions, it doesn't make a sense to looking to the each individual problem. We need to look in kind of the broader level. We started to work on the specific projects which the institutions are investing. And then on the basis of our experience with the projects, we're trying to influence the policies of those institutions. So we both trying to work with the local NGOs, local communities in the different countries and addressing their issues. For example, someone wants to build a coal power plant next to the village. There is a problem with resettlement, so we're trying to assist the local community to dealing with those issues. As well, we're trying to change the policies of the institution. So in the long run, they do not invest, for example, in the coal, and they rather invest in the energy efficiency. So there are more benefits for the people in our region.
What success have you had so far in changing the way some of these big organizations perceive the environment or human rights or various other issues?
When we started to work, there were most of the institutions that didn't have their own environmental or the social policies or human rights policies. Now they do starting to have those policies. They also start to have a compliance mechanisms, which we believe is very important because it's not only about the issue of writing the policies, but also make the institution accountable whether those policies are implemented on the ground. And we can see it, for example, in the operation of the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development. They have a policies now. They have a mechanism which is found at the for example, in Croatia, in the case of the building of one hydro or the plan for the building of the one hydropower plant, they basically ignore a whole set of the environmental requirements of its policies, and they actually, when they were forced by the compliance mechanism to look, they identified a species which actually were not known before. So that was very, very important from the environmental point of view. But also in the term of the social issues, that is, in Belgrade, we were working with the communities of the Roma who were involuntarily resettled because of the bridge constructions. And we work with the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, as well as European Investment Bank, in identifying not only the places for the resettlement, but also identifying the opportunities for the developing the jobs opportunities for Roma. They were forcing the Belgrade authorities, who were very reluctant to deal with the issues because they felt like, well, you know, we just can evict those Roma. We don't need to care. You know, they were forcing the Belgrade authorities to take this issue seriously. I think it's from kind of the big perspective. The last year, both European Bank for Reconstruction and Development and European Investment Bank, they stopped investing in coal, which we believe it's important step for changing the development of the energy sector in the whole region. Also, there was major shift in the term of the allocation of the EU funds. There are far more EU funds will in the next budget period, far more funds will be allocated to energy efficiency and renewables.
How bad was it when you started up? Did these big banks take into account a lot of these basic issues at all?
the organizations, all of them, they didn't see much of the need for the public consultation. They thought that they have all of the relevant information, they have all relevant technical expertise, why they would need to consult public. That was one major issue. I think the another major issue was that the institutions are run by the bankers. And for them, you know, any sort of the environmental or social issues, they are seen as kind of insignificant, or they are complication for their job. But in reality, those institutions are paid from the public funding, and the governments have seats in those institutions. So in the end, the institutions operate with our taxes. And I think it's what changed that this kind of the understanding a bit increased. But nevertheless, the situation is still not good, because obviously the institutions are expanding. The European Bank for Reconstruction and Development now, 2 years ago, started to operate in North Africa, and their attention to the human rights is actually much lower than in the traditional region. That's mean former Soviet Union and the countries of Central and Eastern Europe. And they are still, you know, trying to make the deals with the current regimes in Egypt, where there are major oppression against any civil society groups who are raising the questions about the regime. They're also working with the clear dictatorships like Uzbekistan. They partially operate also in Turkmenistan and Belarus. And obviously the biggest investments are still in the countries like Russia, where we can see both human rights abuses as well as oppression on the civil society.
And looking forward, how obviously there's the situation in Ukraine at the moment. All the European institutions want to now invest in Ukraine, and we'll probably see them throwing lots of money in that direction, maybe without looking too carefully what they're doing. How do you think this scenario will develop?
I see it slightly differently. What EU offered in Ukraine was a repackage of the same what they did in the past years. They propose loans from the EBRD. EBRD is lending in Ukraine, I believe, since 1996. You know, they propose a lending from the EIB, which is also that was continuation. EIB was making the business with Yanukovych as well, with the previous regimes like Kuchma, etc., etc. So there is not much change. And I think that's the major concern. I think it's the institutions lack a proper public scrutiny where the investment is going. And when we saw some of the priorities, it's part of it was going to address the transmission system in Ukraine. Well, that's partially Ukrainian issue, but it's also partially addressing the European own concerns about the quality of the transmission through Ukraine. I think it's more important would be if both EBRD and EIB would start to invest in the energy efficiency measures that would address the problems of the dependency of Ukraine on the resources. If anyone went to Ukraine, you can see that the energy efficiency potential is absolutely enormous. The quality of the buildings, insulation, it's very, very low. So there is a major potential. And if this investment is made, then this would be come on Ukrainians who can benefit. While if you look to the previous projects, there was a primarily large Ukrainian oligarchs who were benefiting, or those were the European companies who were investing in Ukraine, but very little money went actually for the benefits of the common Ukrainians.
Overall, is it still you feel that the banks and the big companies that seem to be setting the agenda for what type of projects are thought up and approved?
Absolutely. You know, while the institutions have some agenda, it's very clear that most of the countries want to use those institutions for expand their business influence, and they try to develop the opportunities for the industry. And I think it's the large corporations who are able to make sure that the investment is going to in the direction that they want to have a seat. So what we believe is that the institution need to be in far bigger public scrutiny, both on the level of the countries where the investment are made, but also in the countries which are shareholders of those institutions.
Petr Hlobil of CE Bankwatch, ending that edition of In Focus by Chris Johnson. And I'm afraid that's brought us to the end of today's programme. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Should you like to write to us, then please write to english@radio.cz. This is Danielle Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and take care.